Hello, awesome people. Welcome to Embrace the Pivot. I'm Dr. C. Robinson, your host for the show. Join me as we discover what pivoting actually means and how you can embrace your pivot during life's transitions. Happy Wednesday, everyone. Welcome to the Embrace the Pivot podcast. Thank you for joining me. Today's episode is special. The guest is dear to my heart. When I worked out in Hollywood for a couple of years, Xavier Axelson and I met at a writing group, and we bonded over bizarre stories. Both of us working in the entertainment industry in one facet or another, we always shared the craziness that we experienced. And that initial bond over craziness has blossomed into, 15, 16 year friendship. And he was my rock out in Los Angeles. We hung out, he showed me the ropes, we helped each other with each other's writing, and it is just so awesome when I get to highlight my dear friends. Xavier is an award-winning author. He is now expanding from gay erotica into horror and fantasy, and he is so talented with his writing because he can expand into these other genres. He hasn't pigeonholed himself, and that's important when you're pivoting because a lot of people think that what they've done in the past is going to define who they are now, and that's not the case. When you are pivoting from an older version of yourself to a newer version. And who you were in the past just lays the foundation. That doesn't mean that's who you're going to be forever. And that's what I love so much about Xavier's story is he did really well in one area of writing, and now he is expanding his brand. And he's just using what he's written in the past as the foundation to catapult him into other areas. So Xavier is a writer and columnist living in Los Angeles. His work has been featured in various erotica and horror anthologies, including Best Gay Erotica in 2016, Volume 2, and Best Gay Erotica in 2015. His story is so unique. He has covered both fringe culture and sex advice for the Los Angeles Examiner. He has worked in the adult industry for over 15 years, and he first lectured at a college regarding sexual health at the age of 19. He has trained as a dungeon master, worked for a notorious Hollywood madam as a consultant, and as a talent agent for the adult film industry. He has several degrees in communications, library technology, and literature. He is such an incredible individual. I am so excited for you to meet him and hear his story and how he is successfully pivoting in the writing world. Everyone, please welcome Xavier.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So our audience should know our bond goes back now 20 years, which is crazy. Oh yeah. And we met at a writing group and we both found each other so interesting. And what I would really like to talk about is you have one of the most unique career pivots I have ever come across. You are a porn agent. You worked in different porn shops, you a librarian, you work in the restaurant industry, but most of all, you are such a talented writer. And although you started in the gay erotica section, you are now
pivoting to a much broader topics and more meaningful to you. So why don't you take us through that journey, if you will?
Well, I think a recent pivot for me really was, I think back in 2017, around there, for me and what I experienced was the gay erotica bubble that had really just been going full throttle. I started writing gay erotica back in 2010, I think. And it was just blowing up. There were a ton of publishers, there were a ton of writers, there was just a ton of, it was just exploding. And so I jumped into that and then published a number of novellas, published in my first novel. I was also a reporter for the Los Angeles Examiner. I was covering sex advice and fringe culture. And so I did that for a number of years. And that kind of dovetailed with the erotica nicely. And then in 2017, in my opinion, the bubble burst. Two of my publishers closed. The Los Angeles Examiner went under. And so I kind of had this opportunity to put that part of my writer self to bed. I didn't really want to write erotica. That was never my forte. I was always like a horror writer, suspense, thriller writer, but I got published writing romance and erotica. So
and when the bubble, didn't you land on a couple Amazon lists too with your books and everything?
I did with some of my collections. I think when I was, because I got into a couple best of gay erotica collections, which did pretty well. A couple of my titles did do really well. To be honest with you, I wasn't as observant as to what my sales were, but I did know that I did get on a couple best of lists. I was nominated for a couple things, all within this genre. Mm-hmm. So while it might have been big, not a big deal, but something in my genre, it wasn't like I was on the New York Times bestselling list. But so when that bubble burst, that's when I had this opportunity to put that to bed and pivot to focusing more on horror, focusing on, okay, what is next? Instead of really, of course, having that moment of panic of like, okay, how do I get my work back out there? And I even had a moment where I was like, do I really want all this back out there? I can really just let Xavier Axelson go and not bring that back. But I think some of the works were strong enough that I felt they deserved to be seen. And so I did find a third publisher. I mean, what I think I'm most proud of at this moment because of that pivot is that all of my books are in their third reissue, which I think is fantastic.
Amazing. That's huge. Yeah. Yeah. How were you able then to self-reflect and move forward saying, okay, I want to change genres. I want to evolve my writing career. Cause as a writer myself, sometimes it's difficult because you're so stuck in one type of writing and storytelling to then shift over and to be able to create this beautiful piece of work and not feel that imposter syndrome or feel, oh, this is really shitty when it's not. But that's just as an artist, that's, I think, the process that you go through. And at least for me, I go through that till I get to outside the tunnel. I see that light. So how were you able to shift your mindset and your style of writing?
Goodness, what a question. I think I had to focus on, so what I did really was I had to believe in the writing enough. I really just had to be like, this story is good enough and deserves to be told. And it took me from the time, probably from 2017 until this past June, to really, finally, this past June, I really had to say, okay, this is ridiculous. I have this book done. It's gone through. I paid for a professional edit. I paid for beta reads. I had a bunch of people read it. I mean, I got notes from everyone in different genres. I went through the Horror Writers Association and went through a mentorship with them. And finally, I was like, I need to take care of this book. I need to sit down. I need to reread it. I need to work on it. I'm going to give myself a month to do this and get it to my publisher. I hesitate. So, and I think part of the answer to your question, Cheryl, was I had to, so during this time, so from 2017, when everything kind of happened, I was determined to try to get this book to a major publisher. So part of my journey was sending this out to agents, going through that whole rigmarole, learning that process, learning the lessons that this book has taught me. So I think every book is a teacher and it's going to teach you something different. This book taught me a whole hell of a lot.
What was the number one thing that it taught you?
To not rely on good intentioned people.
Ooh.
Good one, right?
That's powerful. Because that's just not in writing. That's in any business. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people really do have good intentions, but it's the action behind it. So if you don't mind sharing, could you share a little bit of how you learned that lesson or what advice you would give to other people that, you know, be able to filter that out?
Or those I think one of the things I learned, number one, is this journey is people need to, if you're going to ask somebody to read your book, just pay them and don't believe that anybody's going to do anything for free. And if they do say they're going to do it for free, you know, I just feel like money, you just have to pay people to do a certain thing and don't rely on people who are like, oh, I don't mind. I'll just do it. And da, da, da. Or, you know, I don't think that ever really works. So I'm trying to think of this, a specific situation where I think I had dealt with someone who, I worked with for many years. I had done interviews with authors they represented. I had some sort of a relationship with this person. I had asked for them to take a read. I had offered to pay, then just never heard back. And I think what I learned actually from Eckhart Tolle recently was that he had written The Power of Now, whatever book it was that he wrote. And he had reached out to some other huge guru, and I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but the other major guru, and he never got back to him. And he was like, and this was when Eckhart Tolle was just getting started. So, you know, he was like, I'm going to send this to la, la, la. And then he never got back. And then he was like, you know, he's busy and I can't take it personally. And he was talking about how when he gets letters from people and he doesn't respond, he goes, it'll suddenly go to, why aren't you responding to me? You know, and then all of a sudden the next email is like, I'm going to follow you outside of your house. You know what I mean? And he's like, you don't have time. You know what I mean? I can't. And he goes, what was funny was because I didn't go after this guru to write a foreword to my book or whatever, he did eventually write a foreword to like the next edition or the next book. He goes, at that point, I didn't really need him. But, you know, he goes, had I like haunted him and stalked him, he wouldn't have done that.
Right.
So having that in my back pocket really helped me understand that it really isn't about me. And I think writing or being a creative, one of the things you have to do is kill your ego multiple times. And really every time you think you've let it go, something will come up and be like, well, what's the problem here? And then all of a sudden you realize it has absolutely nothing to do with you. And somebody else said something really brilliant recently, is that when somebody is not responding to you, it may be that they feel they owe you an apology.
Oh.
And I do believe that. I think some of these people who have not reacted to me either feel ashamed or they feel guilt or they feel that I'm going to respond in some way. And I'm so not like that. So I find that, and that's really, I think what's hard for me to get over is the fact that I've never been someone who is vicious about stuff like that. I'm so easygoing when it comes to, oh, I missed a deadline. Oh, I'm this. And it's not a big deal. So I think when people feel that I'm going to like punish them or spank them for something, I'm just not that. I'm like, I'm not your
father. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, right. You know, it's
so how, okay, let me back up.
Yeah.
As an artist, critics can be very harsh. So how did you prepare yourself when you published the first book to deal with the critics, the reviews? Because we all know how Goodreads goes. And I remember right before I published my first book, you said to me, don't look at Goodreads reviews. Don't. She's vicious. It's vicious.
She's vicious, that one.
So how did...
She's kind of like Yelp.
Like, so how did you prepare yourself for that?
Goodness, back then I didn't. You know, I think when I first wrote my first short story and that got published, it was a Christmas romance, which is just totally beyond, was so out of my comfort zone. And they had to keep like, I'd write what I thought was a happily ever after and the publisher was like, nope. And so I'd have to keep like literally cramming the story into this hole that just didn't fit. You know what I mean? I was like, oh my God, how much more of a happy ending can I get? And I don't write happy endings. It's not my, I mean, so I can't think of anything worse. So then I wasn't prepared for the critiques. And then it wasn't until my second story came out, which was a Valentine's story. I got nailed with all these weird holiday stories. So I wrote this Valentine's story that I still love. I think it's probably one of my favorite things that I've written because the main character is kind of a dick. And so people came at me like, I mean, it wasn't recently, actually, I read a review that I must have missed about the story because the woman wrote, or I shouldn't even say, I think it was a woman. I don't even know if it was a woman, but the critic wrote, if this character got hit by a car, I'd be more concerned about the car. And I think I was drinking coffee and I think I spit it right at my computer screen and started laughing so hard because I thought it was so wonderful. And I think it was probably better that I had read that review now than back then. But I also learned from working in restaurants that there really is no comeback. So when somebody... So here's my process behind critiques. So when I'm writing, it's my job as the parent of this book to arm my children with as much armor as I can, because once they go out into the world, I can't protect them anymore. So I make sure the book is as protected as it possibly can. And then when it goes into the world, I'm like, okay, you're out there and you're going to get attacked. And I, as your parent, am going to have to just be like, thanks for the review. Thanks for the review. Thanks for the and that's what I do, because I think people are taking time to read this book. They're taking time to read your work. Not everybody's going to love everything. Mm-hmm. And you have to be grateful. And it actually, what has something that happened just with the book, the Bond that I just released. I had sent the book to a critic. She reviewed it. She gave me a decent review, but she was like, you know, she had a couple things to say about it. And I was like, that's fine. But it led her to buy another one of my books and she loved it and wrote a glowing review about it. And again, when she wrote the first review, which was like a 3 or 4 star review, it wasn't a bad review, just, you know, I thanked her. And I think it's important to say thank you. And sometimes when people are going to be vicious or cruel or like on Goodreads, you know, some people, I think what bothers me on Goodreads is they can just rate it 1 star and not say anything. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's fair.
No. And I mean, that's a whole nother conversation too, right? Like as an artist, it's who are you to judge my art?
Right. And or who are you to, I mean, I just am not the person that's running around giving bad reviews. I'm just not. And I think everything that people put out there is some sort of part of them. And I think to attack that and casually is very cruel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that goes for business too, right? Mm-hmm. Not every time you're going to get along with your boss or a client or vendor or customer, and you can't take it personally. I don't like that saying, but it's true. It's, you just have to let it roll off your back and just keep moving forward. But I would like to talk right now about Elemental, which you just released. So if you just want to share a little bit about the story and where the listeners can find it.
Sure. So Elemental is my first series that I've ever released. It will, I believe it's going to be four books. Book one, which came out October 1st, is called The Bond. It is about really at the heart of the story. It's really about the bonds. Well, there's a lot of bonds going on in this book. So there's the bond, I think, of friendship, the bond of family. I think internally, the heart of the story is a family saga. In a way, there's a lot of magical things or horrific things happening. But I think the core of the story is this family, is this father and his daughter, is this relationship between these men. It's an intense read. When I had to reread it recently before to send it for a final proof, and it's a big book. I mean, I think it's over 500 pages.
Wow.
It's a big book. And so when I had to reread it again, I was like, shit, I don't want to, I've already read it 8,000 times. You know, I was like, God, I have to read it one more time. I got so wrapped up in it that the first day, I think I read 300 pages, and I was literally so wrapped up in my own story. And so, and so like, I was like, this is so good. And I literally just forgot that I had written it, you know? And I think that's the sign of a good story. I got myself caught up in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, if this is still exciting me and still able to draw me in after I've read it. But I also was like, God, this is so unrelenting. I started to feel bad for the characters. I was like, God, it just never stops. It's like this unending thrill. It's an unending ride that you just, by the time you get off it, you're like, wow, these poor guys, you know?
So then it's a series of four books. Is it with the same characters?
Yeah. So, it will be with the four characters. I had started the second book a while ago. And now that the first book is out there, I'm really finding bits as a writer, and I'm sure you can relate to this. I'm now finding like bits and pieces of the second book and all these different files on my computer and like notes on my phone. And I'm like, for now I'm trying to gather all of those together and figure out where to go with it. So to find The Bond, you can just go to Amazon and Google or search Xavier Axelson. You can search Xavier Axelson on Google. All of that is good. My website is xaviersensual.com. I lost Xavier Axelson. Somebody stole it. Because again, back in 2017, when I was like, oh, you know, fuck it. I'm not gonna do this anymore. Gave up my domain and somebody took it. So I no longer have xaviersensual.com. I think it's like a furniture thing, like one of those weird, you know what I mean? Like, okay. But I can buy it back for like $2,000. Oh, so yeah.
Before I let you go, what is your biggest piece of advice for anyone looking to pivot within their career?
Be brave and do it. Bravery. Everything is so fragile that to not take the chance is just not, you just take the chance, just do it.
Yeah. I love it. And I love you. Thank you so much for being on today's episode.
Thank you for having me. Love you too.
You can follow me, Dr. C, on Instagram at embracethepivot. I hope all of you embrace your pivot.